And now it's time for us to discuss more of these headlines and simple keywords. Adam joining us on the line. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Lena. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday indeed. Thanks for joining us right in. Always, it seems to be the overwhelming majority of headlines covering the Seoul-Washington summit from the weekend. So yeah. Let's start there. This is our first keyword of the day.
Biden trip.
So everything seemed to have fallen into place. The U.S. President Joe Biden has wrapped up a three-day trip to South Korea. It wasn't all that eventful, and that's a positive takeaway. Give us a summary of what happened.
Yeah, certainly was quiet, thankfully, because there were no real provocations from North Korea. That was kind of the main concern that possibly could have overshadowed Biden's visit here to South Korea, which was the first as U.S. president. Of course, he's made trips here as vice president back in 2013. I actually attended one of his speeches when I was in university. He gave a speech at Yonsei University as vice president, and it lasted, I think it was a couple of hours. I didn't quite remember what it was about, but yes.
But it was memorable nonetheless.
It was memorable nonetheless. And yes, that was when his last trip was, but in a different position. Now, this trip this time was a bit different, actually, to previous visits by past U.S. presidents in that there were some changes to the usual itinerary. Firstly, upon arrival last Friday, Biden immediately made a trip to the Samsung Electronics chip complex in Pyeongtaek. That's the first by an American president, in fact. And Korea's President Yoon Suk-yeol joined him at the plant, and they were guided by Samsung Electronics Vice Chairman Lee Jae-yong. The two leaders also vowed to work together to strengthen supply chains for critical components such as semiconductors. This kind of chip supply chain has been kind of one of the key agenda items or the focus of the Biden administration as soon as he took office, in fact. Now, on Saturday, Biden paid a visit to the Seoul National Cemetery to pay tribute to the fallen soldiers of the Korean War. Later in the afternoon, of course, the highlight, Biden arrived at the new Korean presidential office in Yongsan for that much-awaited summit with Yoon. Their first summit talks began with a small group meeting that focused on North Korea issues as well as alliance matters. The two leaders held brief one-on-one talks, and then they were joined by their aides for an expanded meeting to discuss economic security and supply chain risks. Now, the talks lasted 110 minutes, which is slightly longer than expected. Immediately after their talks, they then held a press conference. On Saturday evening, Yoon hosted an official dinner banquet at the National Museum of Korea, which is near the presidential office in Yongsan. It was attended by some 80 government officials, business leaders, and other dignitaries as well. On Sunday morning, yesterday morning, Biden met with Hyundai Motor Group Chairman Chung Hee-sun. Biden wrapped up his trip with a visit to the Korean Air and Space Operations Center alongside President Yoon again. And it marks the first visit to the center by a U.S. president, in fact. And now, the KAOC, which is at the Osan Air Base in Pyeongtaek, it's a key strategic command post for directing aerospace operations within the Korean peninsula. Yoon is actually the first Korean president to visit the center in some 13 years as well. You might be wondering, did Biden visit the demilitarized zone? Well, he didn't. That's probably because he visited twice before, the last being as vice president in 2013. So that was kind of something that was different from previous U.S. presidents, right, whose usual trip or schedule does include the DMZ, but not for Biden this time.
All right. As for why the supposed plan to meet the former president Moon Jae-in had been scrapped, we'll actually get the details with a conversation our second hour with a Professor Kim Byung-ju, because there are questions raised about why that was canceled seemingly last minute. But staying with Biden's trip, let's move on to our second keyword of the day.
Boosting cooperation.
So there are many things that were discussed and a slew of agreements made, combined military exercises for one, a collaborative economic frameworks. Could you run us through the key takeaways from the U.S. president's trip?
Sure. Now, the leaders agreed to, quote, initiate discussions to expand the scope and scale of combined military exercises and training on and around the Korean Peninsula. That's according to a joint statement by the two nations. In recent years, military exercises, they've been scaled down amid diplomatic kind of overtures toward North Korea. by the Moon Jae-in and Donald Trump governments. Later, the pandemic was also to blame for the scaled down drills as well. So it seems like the new Korean president, as well as Joe Biden, they want to kind of, they're looking towards increasing these joint military drills. Mm. Also in the statement, Biden committed to deterrence using the full range of U.S. defense capabilities, including nuclear, conventional and missile defense capabilities. They also agreed to reactivate what's called the Extended Deterrence Strategy and Consultation Group. That's a high-level consultative mechanism which has not met since early January 2018. So it's been quiet for a few years. Now, the two further also recognized the potential for cooperation in the defense industry as well. Mm. They agreed to strengthen partnerships in the defense sector supply chains, joint development, as well as manufacturing. Mm. And their joint statement also underscored the importance of trilateral cooperation between South Korea, the US, and Japan. Of course, we're responding to North Korean issues. On economic matters, Yoon and Biden further discussed South Korea's participation in the U.S.-led Indo-Pacific Economic Framework. It's set to be formally established during Biden's visit to Japan this week, details of which I'll go on to in our third key word. Mm. Now, the IPEF, it was proposed by the United States last October, and it's kind of viewed as a means for members to be less reliant on China and to find kind of alternative supply chains. That's kind of basically the gist of it. The leaders also agreed to direct their national security councils to launch an economic security dialogue. They said it was aimed at aligning the bureaucratic and policy approaches between the two governments. And Biden also stressed during his meetings with business leaders his global mission to kind of strengthen the American economy by convincing foreign companies like Hyundai to launch new operations in the United States. Mm-hmm. And those are the kind of the topics that were discussed when Biden met with Chung Yi-sun, the Hyundai Group chairman.
All right, let's move on to our third keyword of the day.
Heading to Japan.
So Biden is now in Japan for meetings with Tokyo officials. Japan is usually the first stop for a U.S. president visiting Asia, but it seemed that, well, the timing and the priority of that also raises an important diplomatic discussion. But Biden chose Korea first, long story short. What's in store for Biden in Tokyo then?
Right. Well, soon after arriving in Tokyo yesterday evening, Biden stopped by the U.S. Chief of Missions residence to take part in a room dedication for Norman Mineta, the late U.S. Transportation Secretary. Now, Mineta served in the cabinets of both George W. Bush and Bill Clinton. He died earlier this month. Today, Biden is to call on Emperor Naruhito before talks with Prime Minister Fumio Kishida. Now, the aforementioned Indo-Pacific Economic Framework will likely top the agenda, and details of which are likely to be unveiled after that summit. Mm-hmm. Now, what to say, the IPEF is unlikely to include any binding commitments, and Asian countries and trade experts, they've kind of given a decidedly lukewarm response to the program. They say it's limited by Biden's kind of reluctance to risk American jobs due to foreign trade deals. Mm. But Washington has had a bit of an economic vacuum in the Indo-Pacific region, largely due to Donald Trump quitting this multinational Trans-Pacific trade agreement. That kind of gave China an opening to expand its influence. And of course, Biden wanted to rein in China's influence. It's probably will likely to push through with that new trade deal. Now, another agenda item is likely to be Tokyo's plan to expand its military capabilities as well as reach of the military as well. That's something that, of course, Seoul will be opposed to and won't be very happy about, as well as other neighboring countries as well. We'll have to see what kind of discussions come out from that. Tomorrow, Japan hosts Biden at a summit for the Quad, which will also be closely looked at. So that's a four-country strategic alliance that also includes Australia and India. So the leaders of those two countries will also be there. The Quad is also widely seen as an attempt to counter China's military and economic ambitions as well.
Mm. All right. So to mainly keep China in check and stop expanding its influence, it seems, in the Indo-Pacific region. Let's move on to our fourth keyword of the day.
Eased entry.
So more antivirus measures are being eased beginning today, including testing requirements for people entering South Korea. What's the latest?
Yeah, so Korea will accept these rapid antigen tests for people coming into the country. This will make it easier and less expensive as well for those visiting or returning to the country. I think at LAX, I think a rapid antigen test is something like $69, and it's almost twice that when buying a PCR test. Mm-hmm. And of course, a rapid antigen test, the results come out quicker as well. Mm-hmm. So you're paying less for a quicker result. So mm-hmm. I think that is what the government has taken into consideration. And previously, only a PCR test taken less than 48 hours before entry was valid. Now, anyone who has a negative rapid antigen test taken within 24 hours can enter Korea. But the test must be conducted by a medical professional. That is the caveat. Results of self-test kits are not accepted. The government expects that these RAT testing will be relatively simple and inexpensive in most countries as well. Also, from June 1st, the number of tests that must be performed after entry to Korea will be reduced from 2 to 1. In addition, from June 1st, all those 12 and under will be exempt from vaccination. That's up from the previous 6 years and under. Now, the 7-day quarantine for COVID-19 patients, that's still in effect and will remain so through June 20th. Whether it will be extended remains to be seen. And this all comes as the pandemic continues to wane. Now, the number of new confirmed cases fell back under 20,000 yesterday. It's the first time in 6 days that the number of new cases fell below that mark. And for Sundays, the first time since January 30th. So we're still seeing these cases plateau, not quite sharply drop, but plateauing and kind of in a steady downward trend.
All right. So we'll still keep tabs on the numbers, but it seems like the general direction still remains the same. Loosen these standing COVID restrictions in a step-by-step process. And on to our final keyword of the day.
Korean car boom.
So Korean cars are gaining popularity, particularly in Europe, now having the third biggest market share in the continent. Run us through the details.
Yeah, that's quite a significant milestone because, as many people know, Europe is quite a very competitive automobile market. Of course, a lot of European cars taking a lot of the market share there. But Hyundai and Kia seems to be going up. In the first quarter of this year, Hyundai and Kia sold a combined 270,000 vehicles in Europe. This is all amidst the pandemic and all this demand woes, or supply woes rather, of cars during the past couple of years. It's been quite hard to buy a car, hasn't it? this is all according to data from the Korea Automobile Manufacturers Association. And it's also an on-year increase of more than 21%, so quite a jump. So Korean cars now make up nearly 10% of the European car market. European cars, of course, still have the lion's share. Japanese cars are in second place. In terms of brand, Volkswagen takes up the most market share with 23.8%. That's probably largely because Volkswagen is a car group. They have many brands under their names. Stellantis is next with nearly 20%. The rise is mostly thanks to strong demand for eco-friendly vehicles, such as EVs, of which Hyundai and Kia are pretty pushing strongly forward with, and seem to be gaining quite a lot of popularity in not just Europe, but in the US as well. But Korean cars aren't doing so well in China, which is also a very large car market. China's automobile sales volume as a whole in the country in the first quarter was 6 million. That's an on-year increase of just over 6%. But among them, the sales volume of Korean cars was only 94,000. That's down nearly 40% on year.
All right, so it seems as that, well, in certain markets, Korean cars are faring well, ironically, because what was happening in the pandemic could have panned out in the benefit of Korean car makers. Interesting, right? As for the car wait list, yes, I think everyone around me was looking forward to buying a new car.
I think it's something like nearly half a year you have to wait if you want to buy a new car at the moment.
And for EVs, it's just as competitive. Thank you very much, Anna, for all the updates this Monday morning. Have a safe day, and we'll speak to you again tomorrow.
You're very welcome. See you tomorrow.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.